Yeah.
Two groups, I think, so they're perfect.
Make sure this is gonna work.
It does not, wouldn't. It would work better was this thing.
This has a laser pointer. So. Okay, I'll just give a sort of a brief introduction of what we're looking at here. We installed an on-site wastewater system, kind of smaller scale, and instrumented it very well in the Piedmont region of Georgia. So I guess this relates in that it's a structured soil, and we're going to be looking at hydraulic properties such as pressure head and also ponding. So in a newly installed drain field, we typically see infiltration rates that are faster than in a mature drain field, and this is because of what we note as a biomat. And the biomat is typically an organic layer that consists of particulates that are in the effluent and bacterial biomass. And what this does is it clogs, it alters the infiltration rate, by clogging soil pores. And this is usually evident by a thin saturated zone where the biomat is developed, and then under that there will be an unsaturated soil. And this biomat formation is a good thing in our soils because it potentially increases the storage time of the wastewater along with treatment of the effluent. Now, one of the ways that we can quantify this these changes is with numerical modeling, and the model that Dr. Radcliffe and I have used is Hydrus 2D, and this was developed by Simonek and Van Genuchten, and there are several studies that have used it prior to us using it to quantify wastewater changes in soil due to wastewater application. So briefly, our site is located in Griffin, Georgia. As I said before, it's a typical Piedmont Cecil series soil. We installed three trenches in the BT1 horizon as a conventional system. Conventional meaning that it's gravity fed. It's a gravel system with just a perforated pipe using a gravity distribution box. It's dosed three times per day at a loading rate of 3.7 centimeters per day. And this is 1.5 times what the Georgia recommended rate is for this particular soil. And this was done to go ahead and get a biomat developed so that we could look at hydraulic effects and treatment of nitrate later on. And then we're taking domestic wastewater from a wastewater treatment plant in Griffin, Georgia, and transporting it here and putting it in this little white tank here, and that's the wastewater we're using. It's domestic strength, meaning that the BOD is less than 400 and the total suspended solids are less than 200 milligrams per liter. So my objectives for this presentation today are just to determine variations in pressure head due to effluent dosing, determine changes in effluent ponding over time, and then we're going to compare Hydrus 2D model predictions to our observed pressure heads in the field. As I said, the wastewater or the drain field is well instrumented. We have tensiometers that are installed at 3.3 meters and 6.6 meters from the outlet of the septic tank. And what we did was manually read these for once a month for 4 hours after the morning wastewater dose. We also have automated tensiometers that record pressure every 15 minutes, as well as water level recorders in each of the trenches that record ponding every 15 minutes. So this is just a sort of schematic of what our tensiometer layout is. The blue letters here indicate the depth relative to the trench bottom or you know, below or above. The brown letters here are the proximity to the trench. And then T1, T is just for tensiometers, and they're labeled. This is our labeling system. The A's for T1A, T2A, T6A, T7A are just the automated tensiometers. And we're going to talk about, we'll talk about all of them in a way or another. So this is what the system looks like. This is our dosing tank. It's dosed via electronic ball valve controlled by a data logger. And then we have the tensiometers installed, the water level recorder installed here, and we also have lysimeters for taking water samples, which I won't really talk about today. So the results. So what I did was developed a contour map of the tensiometers that were installed. So the x-axis here is the depth, the horizontal distance, and the y-axis is the depth in relation to the trench bottom. And then each box represents the time, so for 4 hours after the dosing. So if the dosing was at 8, this is 8:15, 9:15, 10:15, and 11:15. And I'm going to compare two dates, April 2009 versus July 2009. We started the wastewater application on April 9th, I believe. So I was just going to evaluate the changes over that three-month period. First of all, we see that the pressure heads over the four-hour period range from about 0 to 80 centimeters, and it's saturated. It's really hard to see the colors here. I'm sorry. But the greatest pressure heads were seen at the depths of about 40 to 60 centimeters below the trench bottom, and this is because of the water infiltrating down in this saturated system. After 3 to 4 hours, we see the pressure heads are approaching zero, and you can tell by the colors here. The blue is the wettest or the highest pressure head, and over the 4 hours, it slowly reduces down to close to zero centimeters. Now we're going to look at the July 2009. It's the same setup with the graphs, but we observe pressure heads that range from negative 45, which would be a metric potential, centimeters above the trench bottom in the area here, to again 80 centimeters below the trench bottom over the four-hour period. Overall, the pressure heads were lower in July, and this is probably due to seasonal moisture fluctuation because of the summer conditions and the temperature. But overall, over the four-hour period, the pressure heads were relatively constant below the trench bottom. And this is at about 60 to 80 centimeters again. So I'll sort of switch gears here and start talking about the trench ponding. I'm going to compare trench 1 and trench 3 because they were somewhat similar to each other, and then show you trench 2. The graph to the right is the ponding over a 48-hour time period that I just arbitrarily picked. The blue line is July, and the black line is in April. And you'll notice that in April, the ponding depth was lower in the trenches versus July, and we think that's due to the hydraulic changes that occur to the biomat formation. The ponding level decreases more rapidly in trench 3. If you'll notice here, the slope of this line is very strong, and this is either a variability in KSAT within the drain field area, or it could be that the trenches weren't exactly leveled when they were installed, and the water is flowing from one end to the other. And also the dose is slightly higher in the third trench, and that could be due to the distribution box that we installed and we're using to distribute the wastewater. It may not be level, although it started out level when we installed it. And then in trench 2, we see sort of the opposite effect. In April, the ponding depth was higher than in July, and then also in July we're seeing that the wastewater levels are going back down to zero over the 48-hour time period. Again, we have a slightly higher dosing in July, and this again could be something to do with the distribution device that we're using. The last time I sampled, I noticed that there was quite a bit of accumulation of some sort of biomaterial in the distribution box, so that could be affecting the dosing. So in the future, we may need to use some kind of like a speed leveler to equalize the dosing between the trenches. And then now I'm going to switch gears one more time and compare pressure head to rainfall. Pressure heads to ponding height and then rainfall. So as I said before, the dosing began in early April, and you can see here that the black line is the pressure head and the blue line is ponding. Pressure head of the soil is a function of ponding depth. One thing that we found sort of by accident, because our valve quit working one or two times over the period, is that when we do not pond water here, we get a relatively fast negative pressure head when no dose is applied. But overall, from this graph, what I want to show is that we should begin, as the biomat matures, we should begin to see the pressure head go down with a constant ponding level and maybe even become negative over time as it matures. And then the second thing I wanted to show was the precipitation effect. And in particular, if you look at June and July, and the precipitation here is in millimeters, but in this period in June, we got probably a little over an inch of rainfall over a couple of days. And then this was a one-day rainfall of about an inch. And we see that the pressure head increases and the ponding also increases when it rains. And so the trenches are acting as some sort of storage area for rainfall that's infiltrating through the soil. That was trench two, the T2 tensiometer, which is 15 centimeters below the trench that I was referring to. So the second part of this is we used the data that we had to run the Hydrus 2D model. This graph here is the Hydrus mesh that we developed. The red dots are observation points that are representing the tensiometers, the automated tensiometers in particular, T1, T2, T6, and T7. We have a vertical space of 150 centimeters and a horizontal space of 200 centimeters. And this area here represents the trench, which is 45 centimeters horizontal versus 30 vertical. And so what we did is we took cores and collected data for a soil water characteristic curve. And using that data, we ran a program called RETC to get the Van Connichten parameters, which would be like theta S, theta R, N, and alpha. And then plugging those into the Hydrus model, we used a 96-hour subset of our data to predict KSAT. And the KSAT measurements that were predicted were 2.6, 1.4, and 0.05 centimeters per day for three horizons. And that would be like the BT1 horizon, BT2, and BC1 horizon. And then we took another subset of data, which was July 10th to August 5th from the ponding data set, and used that as the input flux for the model. So the Hydrus 2D results for the T1 and T2 tensiometers, which are 10 centimeters and 15 centimeters below the trench bottom. The blue line represents the model prediction, and the black line is the measured data. For some reason, my legend didn't come out. But the root mean squared error for those two tensiometers was 4.2 centimeters for T1 and 3.8 centimeters for T2. You'll notice that the model data shows a wider range of pressure heads. For the blue line, it fluctuates a lot more, and we think this is probably due to sensitivity of the input data, in particular the dosing rate. We may not be accurately inputting that data in, and the other thing to note is in the model space we did not include an atmospheric boundary to be able to look at the rainfall data just yet, so that could also be one of the reasons for our wide range of pressure heads there. And then the second graph is showing the T6 and T7, which are just outside of the trench. And the root mean squared error is a little bit higher for these two, 10.9 centimeters for T6 and 16.3 for T7. Again, there's a wide range of pressure heads that the model's predicting, and it's probably because we're underestimating dose volumes. In the T7 tensiometer, we're over-predicting pressure heads, and we may have to add a separate biomat layer into the model to start to reduce the pressure head there. So, in conclusion, the effluent ponding was greater in July than in April for trenches 1 and 3, and we think this is due to the biomat development lowering the hydraulic conductivity. In trench 2, we didn't see this occurring, and this could be because of the rate of development being variable. It could be because of dosing problems, even within the same system. But as the system matures, we do expect to see the pressure head decrease, possibly to a negative pressure head, which may trigger potential, while ponding remains constant. We see rainwater infiltration into the soil collecting in the trenches, and this could become an issue if we have high rainfall events where we are filling the trenches and the system could fail. And then with the modeling, the H2D comparisons were good for the tensiometers immediately around the trench T1, T2, and T6. But with T7, it's not as good, and we could probably fix this either by introducing an atmospheric boundary condition or a biomat layer under the trench bottom in the model space. And lastly, I'd just like to thank WRF and Georgia DHR as the funding sources for the project.
Many thanks at first for the information and so other questions.
Yes.
You mentioned at the beginning that you have pore clogging during the infiltration process.
Right.
Do you consider that in your model? So do you consider the change in hydraulic conductivity, laterate hydraulic conductivity, to the pore clogging?
Not yet. We plan to, once we get the model developed for the initial, I guess the first stages, the first few months, I think the plan is to go in and add a biomat layer, just a small 1 or 2 millimeters, which is about the size of what the biomat would be, and then use a lower hydraulic conductivity in that layer to simulate the pore clogging effect. Yes.
Do you have an actual proof for this biomat? So did you analyze the soil after treatment?
We have not yet because we're still using the system. Once the project is over, which should be a year from December, I think the plan is to dig up the system and take another set of core samples to redo the soil water characteristic curve and also attempt to measure the biomat thickness and or if it's there or not.
But can you back calculate what is the change in hydraulic conductivity because of the biomat?
We hope to be able to, and we hope to be able to use the model, so a validated model for the first few months versus a validated model maybe at the end of the monitoring period to see what the changes were based on application of wastewater for 18 months. Mm-hmm. And we also are going to back the dosing rate down to whatever the recommended dosing rate was, which I think it's 2.5 centimeters per day, which is what Georgia recommends for that particular soil.
Okay.
Yeah, instead of the forward modeling, you can do some inverse modeling to estimate the hydraulic.
Right, and I think I forgot to mention that is the 96-hour data set for the modeling was an inverse solution in hydrous. So we used that to predict the KSATs, and those KSATs actually were relatively close to what we measured in the field before we installed the system. I'm sorry, what was the last?
You do not change the Van Gluten parameters.
No. Just the. For all of them, yeah. We could change all of them. But I fit the. So I used the soil water curve and the RSTC to fit the Van Gluten and wanted to keep those constant just to be able to, one, reduce my runtime for the model, and to, two, predict the case head only.
But if you have poor clogging,
it would change.
Right.
Yeah, so if we do another set of soil water curve samples after the experiment and then fit those to, I guess, model number 2, which would be, you know, after a certain amount of time of dosing.
Okay. More open questions? Good. So if not, then I thank you again.
Thank you.
For your lecture. And, well, unfortunately, we have then to say that 60% out of the lectures were given, while the other 2 lectures were not there. That's why also we are a bit early, a bit quicker in time. So David just arrives, but he was too late. So, well, first of all, I'd like to thank the 3 who gave the lectures, Stefan Pate, as well as the others. We heard something about the mechanics, about structure index, as well as about waste water treatment as well. So it was a wide spectrum. It would have been nice to have the last 2 as well here. Nevertheless, thanks for the 3 presenters, as well as for the audience, as well as for the questions. And last but not, but not least, I would like to say thanks to Alvin to help as well. And so with that, I leave you, I say goodbye. Those who are interested in soil physics, S1, there's a business meeting at 5 o'clock in the room 407. Okay, thanks so much and see you next.